car in the garage, and my fucking porn came through the Bluetooth.
Ask her. I heard Dean Blundell smokes crack. Was actually the first to smoke it with Rob Ford, I heard, too.
What's Dean got to do with it?
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
Dave's rated R for, you know, restricted and for a little bit romantic.
What do we got?
Whoa, what is that in the background?
What is that over there by the mic?
Is he making wallets?
What
is he doing?
What's he doing?
It looks like he's... Never mind.
What's he doing? What? Is he dead?
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Let's start right out. Hey, what happened?
Welcome. Hi, everybody. My name is Dean. Welcome to the program. Good to see everybody today. It's Thursday. Am I right, Locke? Are we on Thursday already?
Oh, don't do that. No, it's Thursday.
Yeah. It's Thursday. Yeah. It is. I'm literally at that point of the pandemic where I'm like, pretty sure it's Thursday.
Like, I wake up every day and I got to check my phone. I'm like,
what fucking day is it today? Yeah, I know. Anyway, I work. Yeah, I know you do. Yeah. You're on the radio this morning saying what day it was, going like this. It's 6 degrees in the city of trees. My name is Lachlan Cross.
Welcome
to the radio program, everybody. Good to see you on 95.7 Cruise FM.
I do not. That's not my show.
Anyway, great to see everybody today. Lachlan Cross, 95.7 Cruise FM, the locker room in Edmonton, morning show host, biggest, best morning show in the city. Thanks for joining us. James DeFiore at James DeFiore.
Not sure about that.
There you are.
But I'm going to let it slide.
You are. There's no one here to battle it. So just
accept it. It's the biggest show in town.
Massive.
You're the best morning guy out of the four of us for sure.
Not so much because I'm here, but that's okay.
So you're not a morning guy anymore. That's the joke.
I'll always be a morning guy. Let's do it in the afternoon. James DeFiore, blackballmedia.ca, joins us as well. At James DeFiore, good to see you, brother. And Brandon Friesen is our guest today. Brandon is an Uber producer. He's got ties to Canada. He's an entrepreneur. He's got television shows. I watched two of them today. He also works with almost every band that you've heard of and some that you haven't that I was introduced to today. But Brandon, great to talk to you. Good to see you. Brandon Friesen, everybody.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. And by the way, when you say Uber producer, that doesn't necessarily mean that I drive Uber and also produce, but it could.
Well, it might, knowing the gig economy is a bit of a shit show, isn't it? Like, where are you right now? Are you in LA?
I'm in LA. Yep. Los Angeles.
Is that your studio? Your basement studio? Is that, or is that your studio?
This is my house studio. You're only seeing a little portion of it.
Let's show us around. Yeah. Show us around. Show us what you got. This is a mega producer studio, by the way, everybody. There we go. Yeah, he's going to turn it around. Take us for a walk. Take us for a tour. Yeah.
Okay. Here we go. Oh, so, yeah. Where are we at? Here we go. So there's a little guitar. All the guitar stuff is there. That compressor came out of Bob Marley's studio, Tuff Gong in Jamaica.
No way.
And there's actually a Canadian story tied to that. So there's only about 10 of those. It's called the Orange County, which is ironic because Winnipeg, Orange County, I don't know the connection. But if you look at pictures of Marley in the studio, you'll see that thing behind him. Yeah. Yeah, right there. So I use that.
That's to compress all your sound?
Billy Ray Cyrus. That's compression and EQ, but it's old school. It's from the 70s. And then there's more here. Some guitars, collection of guitars, and then a bunch of gear, outboard gear, microphone. This is where I recorded, you know, everybody from the Kooks to Billy Ray. Everybody's been here. And then it just keeps going. Then there's another studio here.
Yeah.
That's my assistant's set up over there. And then there's another one.
Dude, you have soundboards everywhere in your house. It's like every room you walk into, there's a fucking super massive old school mixing board.
Yep.
It's wild.
I'm a child of I started in the 90s, so you know, I like touching faders still.
Have you had a hard time? Obviously, you're of our vintage, but have you a hard time? You know, I know you've got some old shit there because you like the old shit. But have you had a hard time? You know, going from that analog space into a digital space, has that been difficult for you? Have you are you at that point like I am, when, you know, and a lot of us come from the old school radio where you're cutting tape and you're splicing and you're doing all the shit. Like, we've kind of seen that whole progression. It's got to fucking amaze you how far we've come in the last 15, 20 years.
I'll tell you. So the last thing I just mixed for Metallica, I did it on my laptop. But yes, I started in the 90s, did it on my laptop. And I mean, you haven't heard it yet. In fact, the Who song Sad But True, the cover of the Metallica song Sad But True that you can go online right now and see on YouTube, that also I did on my laptop. No outboard gear at all. But I still do mix stuff. We just did some things with Star Wars, and that was all. I used all that outboard gear that you saw. But yeah, I started in the 90s, started on tape. I don't miss cutting tape at all. And I had one of the very first Pro Tools. In fact, Lachlan lived in Winnipeg when I had a studio in Winnipeg called Studio 11. And that was the point in time when Lachlan and I were doing a lot of things together, where we were moving away from tape and digital recording devices like ADATs, and we were moving into Pro Tools. But back then it only could handle 16 tracks. Now it's unlimited, right? I love the new era, man. I love the new digital era. I don't miss tracking. I've made records recently on tape, and it's a different experience. It's just a different art, you know. So
is it a different sound though, Brandon? Do you hear a difference when you're mixing?
Tape. I mean, tape does a certain thing to the bottom end, where it kind of carves it out, so it doesn't distort the way you want it to. But nowadays everything's about subs, man. Even modern rock music, there's like 808 subs that are living in the bottom, and those are living between 20 hertz and 80 hertz, right? Kind of like where you like your microphone lock. You always like that bassy boomy mic thing going on. That's 80 to 120.
I put my chin in it.
Exactly. So to make a modern record nowadays that sounds like a modern record nowadays, you wouldn't even want to use tape, because it's going to carve out part of the sonics that people want to hear now, are used to hearing.
Yeah, that's a good point. I have a question. Who's the best harmonica player you've ever worked with?
Hands down you. You're the only guy who can get up. The only guy who can get up on stage, and I've seen you do this many times, with complete confidence and rip a solo completely in the wrong key and still pull it off.
I never knew what fucking key I was in, Brandon. I don't know how to read music.
You'd come up and to jam, you'd be like, "What's the key?" I'm like, "What does it matter, Locke?" You know,
can I tell a quick story about something Brandon did to me? So I was driving home one time because my daughter, this is after I left Winnipeg, and he had already left Winnipeg, and I was in Edmonton, and my daughter ended up dancing at the Royal Winnipeg Ballet in Winnipeg. So we were going back to see her. So I'm driving through the prairies and I'm flipping through radio stations, and a song comes on, and I'm like, that sounds like me. And I'm listening to this song, and it's a fucking cover of Man of Constant Sorrow. And then the guy comes off the shit end of the tune and goes, "That was Tinfoil Phoenix and a new Canadian band." And they had released a song. Now, I was pretty sure that was my harmonica on there, but I don't fucking remember recording it. So I called the band and I said, "I fucking think you guys put us," and he goes, "Yeah, you were at the fucking studio one night, shit faced." And Brandon fucking rolled tape and then probably had to rekey it and then put the fucking harmonica on the song. And I learned about it in my car on the way to see my daughter in Winnipeg. Yeah. Like probably 3-4. I swear to God, I have no recollection of doing it. And Brandon told me later, "Yeah, we recorded like 3 o'clock in the morning. You were fucking right out of it. You just put a harmonica in your hand and stay in the booth."
You know,
that's my musical career.
those were good times, and I owe it to you, all you Canadian broadcasters at the time. That was like 2000 or 2001, Mark. But Tinfoil Phoenix was a little Winnipeg band that, you know, I was developing a lot of Winnipeg bands at the time, like the Harlots and working with the Watchmen and all this stuff. And
it's one of my favorite bands of all time, the Watchmen. Talked with Danny Greaves the other day. He's got a fucking, still got an incredible voice. I think that he and Joey just put some stuff out. I don't know if you heard it at all. Some of their new stuff.
I haven't yet. No, you know, Sammy, the drummer, I still stay in touch with him, but I haven't been paying attention. But I'm sure it's great. Those guys are fantastic. Super underrated, you know, one of the most underrated Canadian bands. Endless underrated Canadian bands, to be honest. But yeah, so that was so Tinfoil Phoenix was a band around 2000, and we recorded a song called Neapolitan. And I think, were you at the Edge at that time? Were you on the Edge in 2000?
Yeah, for sure. Early 2000, yeah, I was. Yeah.
So without, you know, without radio promotion properly, I think it was C-Fox in Vancouver added it, the Edge added it, and Lachlan was the one on top of it right away. And I think, Locke, you were calling Chorus at the time going, you guys need to add this across the country. And everyone was like, no, it's a Winnipeg band. We don't want to touch it, blah, 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 blah. But anyway, it eventually became a thing. And at that time, Chad Kroeger had just started his 604 label and signed the band. And then we continued to make the record because we only had a few songs recorded at the time while we were already getting airplay. And that Man of Constant Sorrow was the only cover. The rest were all originals. And yeah, Locker, you played harmonica on that, and you smashed it. You did great. I think you have two solos in that song. Back in the day when there were solos, you know.
Yeah. Did you get paid for it, Locke? That's my question.
No. No, it didn't.
Oh, that's strange.
Didn't
strange.
See any
strange
money for Brando. That one.
Strange, Brando. maybe you could send him a couple of bucks.
Yeah. No, we wrote him a check 20 years ago, but it sailed enough. So I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what's amazing about this story is that you were so drunk, you don't remember making a record.
No.
You should have told him you paid him when he got out of the booth.
we paid him in Canadian Club in Ginger or whatever we were drinking at the time.
Well, Brandon's let me stay at his place whenever I go to fucking Hollywood. So that's payment enough.
Yeah,
I shit in his toilet.
How did you guys meet? Obviously, you met in Winnipeg, and I know you know what people don't know about Brandon is he's a Juno Award, multiple Juno Award winner. He's a Grammy nominated producer and audio engineer. He's worked with everybody from Metallica to Dolly Parton to Billy Ray Cyrus. He's worked with absolutely everybody. He's like one of Canada's. Well, he's not even from Canada, but which is makes the story weird. How do you go from Minnesota to Winnipeg to LA, and how did you guys meet? Because you don't hear a lot of people making their way to LA via Minnesota, then Winnipeg, and then LA.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. I met him just because we did a project together in Winnipeg. I did a compilation of local bands in Winnipeg called River City Rocks. And I was looking for somebody to help me produce it because some of the stuff that was coming in was quite rough at the time. And then I sort of put the word out that I was looking for somebody. Brandon put his hand up, and then we ended up working together, I think every year for years after that until I left. And we did also these projects called Studio 97s. So we had bands come in, and I would get Brandon to fucking bring all his gear down, and he'd record everybody from Danko Jones to we did Stained, we did The Watchmen, we would produce these albums.
By the way, side note, Lachlan, we also did that song One for Finger 11, and because of our recording, they chose that to be their next single, and that was
the mad at me for playing Good Times.
Hold on. What you don't know is I talked to Lawrence, the manager, after, and they told me right from the horse's mouth. They were probably mad at you at the time because they weren't charting that song. But One ended up becoming the only U.S. Song that ever charted in the top 10 from our recording, from what we did.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that doesn't surprise me, but I mean, the thing is, at the time, they were fucking threatening me. Like, I had labels calling me weekly
big what? Guys from Sony Music. They were so but, fucking
hold, mad. Hold, hold. Back that train up. This is the music world we don't get a chance to talk about. Finger 11, you helped them with one of their biggest songs ever, and they were mad at you?
No, they came in with they were touring with Ozzy. They got a spot opening up for Ozzy. And yeah. They came in, they agreed to do a Studio 97, and Brandon came down, he fucking tracked it, he took it back and mixed it, and I was like, "Holy fuck, this is a fucking smash hit." It was Finger 11 one thing, nobody had heard it. So we started playing it in heavy rotation. And then the album came out shortly on the heels of them touring with Ozzy, like mm-hmm. literally that within that those within that month, it was like April that year kind of thing, spring tour. And then they wanted to launch with Good Thing or Good Times from that record. And then
I said, well, it's also a great song.
I said, yeah. Well, I'll play it, but we're also going to play One Thing. And they were like, you got to get One Thing off the air. Like, we're not even fucking going to release that as a single. And I'm like, you guys are idiots then. And so record companies have a plan for an album.
They probably like that, eh? Where you're like, then you guys are idiots. Let me
explain to you from the record label point of view, because I have that perspective. When you're pushing a single, you obviously want to chart it. And if you that's why you have a track, because that one song needs to have enough spins in order to go up the chart. So when you have a rogue programmer, which Lachlan always was, which made him great in my opinion, as a fierce, careless record or a radio guy, it does mess up the plan. So the plan is, because you know, charts matter for sales, for you know, talking points, journal for press, they do matter. Just like award show matter, as shallow and stupid as they are, they matter because it gives you something to talk about while everyone's sitting there patting themselves in the back for a job half done. But yeah, so that's why they were mad at you, Locke, because you were messing up their program, and you had built that station, 97, into becoming a powerful, important station in a small market. And you know, I don't know how you what your terminology is. You went from a one share to a four share to three share, whatever your shares are, whatever that means.
Oh, we had a 20 share at one point in that market. We fucking own that market.
You took it from like the third or fourth station in the market, and you brought it to number one, and you knocked it. I mean, 90 was it 92 City or something like that?
We killed them, and then Bob was number one for a while. We knocked them off their horse too.
But
so
different format,
yeah.
Also different format than you.
That's beside the point. I think good radio is still good radio, right? You know.
Yeah.
And yeah.
But that's why they were pissed, because you were just messing up their plan. You were the stick in the spokes. You know what I mean?
But yeah. they wanted to lead with Good Times, and you were already playing One Thing, and it was charting, and it was huge, and people loved it, and you're helping them sell records, and they're like, yeah, man, but that's not the plan. That sounds like so 2001, doesn't it? Like, can you imagine if someone played a Finger 11 song today and it was a hit, but it wasn't what they wanted you to play? They'd be beside themselves with happiness. I can tell you that right now. They'd be so fucking stoked.
Brandon's got a point, though. Brandon's got a point, right? The band was probably okay with it. I wasn't talking to the band. I was talking to labels, right? Yeah. And we had actually Brandon, those songs we mixed. We did more than a couple of tracks like that. That's not the only one that got us in shit.
Messenger.
Tea Party.
Jeff Martin.
So what would you guys just get these songs from guys? You guys would just get these songs from different people and you would remix them? Oh, they would play live for you. Yeah. And then you would remix the live version?
Yeah, Lachlan would flex, and he would get these guys to come to the radio station when they were in town on tour. And we would bring in an audience, set them up in the basement of that. It was like an open area, you know, probably like a 90 capacity kind of size of the room, the size of the Viper Room in L.A. We would set up, you know, all the backline, the drum, and the band would sit there and play a stripped down version, like usually like an acoustical version of their hit, of their song of that they were pushing at that time. And
maybe three or four songs, right?
And then Locke would interview them, and the crowd would ask them questions and a little Q&A, And for the most part, everybody left there really happy, aside from sometimes they'd have to come early in the morning. And, you know, that's hard to do when you're touring because you're never in a good mood early in the morning.
That's why they made cocaine, Brandon.
That's why that was invented.
Correct.
So that was the thing. So we had these original recordings of these popular songs that later on then Lachlan would put together this package and we'd release it. We'd sell them out in like the first day and then,
We'd print, I don't know how many, 5,000 or something, and they'd be gone like that. We always released them around Christmas time. I think we did five. We did three River City Rocks, and we did five of those Studio 97 packages.
But the bigger point here is it's because when it was Winnipeg, it was a small market. It was not considered, you know, Toronto or Montreal or Vancouver. For Lachlan to go, you know, we want to record a song. We want you to give us the rights to release it and blah, blah, blah. They're just like, who are you? You guys are, you know, why? Why would we do all this? And it turned out to work in many ways. So it was an uphill battle. And that's a little bit of the arrogance that happens in those scenarios where, I mean, it still happens to this day. You know, when the Who are on tour and we'll get a radio call from like, you know, Wichita, Kansas wants you to do a thing. And we're like, why? It's Wichita, Kansas. And then they'll go, well, no, this is an influential station and here's why. And then we'll always end up doing it. But yeah, that still exists to this day, and that's the similar scenario. Yeah.
And we broke all the rules, right? Like we weren't supposed to record half those fucking sessions, but we did.
We did it with
fucking outboard gear, and we ended up with fucking studio quality recordings, right?
Yeah.
And that's why they never had a leg to stand on when they called and said, "Well, that sounds like shit. We don't want you to play it because it always sounded great.
It always sounded great. Yeah."
Yeah, because Brandon would come down fucking 3 hours before, plug everything in, do the sound check. The bands would just have to roll in, fucking plug in, and away we go, right? Boom. Mm-hmm. We went live to air with them, but he's running a feed through the fucking wall. We drilled a fucking hole in the wall.
That's right, yeah.
For all his fucking cables, and then Brandon would set up a board that he brought down, and he'd fucking mix it. Right there, and roll tape right into the fucking into a hard drive.
100% illegal, if I'm not mistaken. Like
I'm so illegal.
100% illegal. Yeah.
And not only that, we released those things and sold them.
Abort.
We always raised money for charity, though. We always made money for charity. Yeah.
That's
we got clearances and all that stuff.
That's great.
We weren't bootlegging anything.
Brando, it doesn't sound like you got a lot of... Listen, I know Locker a little bit, and I can tell you, he's the prototypical example of it's easier to ask for forgiveness than permission. So I can guarantee you it was all illegal. Like, I'm pretty sure everything that I've heard today. That's why it didn't make any sense to me at the start. I'm like, wait, I don't understand. You're just messing with their plan. No, you were recording their performances and then pirating them and selling them online.
Listen, like that's pirate what you were doing. Is a really strong word.
I think Lachlan was actually selling them out of the trunk of his car.
Brandon Friesen is our guest. He is a multiple Juno winner, multiple Grammy nominated producer. I was laughing because you sent us your bio and I was going through it, and I'm not laughing, but you introduced me to this band that you were working with right now called The Who. And yeah. You mentioned them earlier, and I watched. It's Mongolian throat rock, right? Like that's essentially what it is. And if you're not familiar with Mongolian throat rock,
awesome.
They have hundreds of millions of downloads of some of their songs. One of them is called Juve, Juve, You. I think.
Yep.
The other one, what was the new one that you just sent us that I was watching? I was dying laughing watching it, going, these guys are actually fucking really, really good.
Well, the second one is Wolf Totem. And then, in fact, their first gold record was in Canada. And that was a song where we took Wolf Totem, which was their Mongolian version. And then I recorded and produced Jacoby from Papa Roach on top of it. And we Englified it. And that song was like number five on the active rock chart in America for 6 weeks. And in Canada, it just went gold last week.
Oh, did it really?
Yeah. Yeah, certified gold.
Yeah. I gotta tell you, it's not like I don't understand any of the music. But it didn't matter because it was like I was introduced to this entire genre, and not just Mongolian throat rock. I mean, that's what it's called because that's what they do, right? They're from Mongolia. But it was. Tell me how you got hooked up with these guys because they're fucking fascinating to me.
Yeah, I mean, and just a side note too. I mean, we've also been working with Star Wars, so there's a song called Sugana Sina that you can find on YouTube. That is the very first time Star Wars has ever commissioned a band outside of their Lucasfilm little circle to come in and provide a song for, and that went in the new Jedi game. And there's also some stuff in the new Mandalorian thing as well. But so we've become canon is in the Star Wars storyline. So that's a really cool thing for the band. And they picked up millions of new fans from that. Well, how I discovered them, a friend of mine, Rusty Cones, who's on Sons of Anarchy, he's the actual legitimate biker on Sons of Anarchy, massive giant of a guy. So I was producing a band that he was playing guitar in 10 years ago. Anyway, we became friends, and he forwarded me a link to Wolf Totem because there's motorcycles in the beginning of the video, right? And I figured, it's just another motorcycle thing because he's a biker and blah, 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 blah. So I watched it, and immediately within a minute, I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing. So I sent a message, and I never do this. I never message bands, but for some reason, I was just so taken back. And I was looking them up, and they had no visibility, nothing going on. Their Facebook page had hardly anything on it. And I just loved it so much. I sent a message, and then this guy named Tuga, who lives in Chicago, called me. Turns out he's the brother to Gala, who's the big guy, the singer. The more incurred player.
Is that him? Is this Gala? Is that the guy Gala. You're talking about?
That's Gala. Yeah. Sweetheart.
Look at that. Fuck. Man. Is that a guitar or is that a death weapon? Well, what's he holding?
Well, that's called the Mongolians call it a Morin Kur, which translates to horse head fiddle. And it's a two string. It's like a cello. It's a two string. There's only two strings, but they play it not like a cello in the sense where you push it down on a fretboard. They actually take their fingernail and they come from up below the string. So when you listen to the new Metallica Sad But True song and you hear that ripping guitar solo that's note for note with everything Kirk Hammett played on the original, they did it with those instruments.
Naked Cheese Whiz on the chat is asking if you had anything to do with the Metallica cover with who and you actually produced that, didn't you?
Yes. Well, so Sad But True, the one that's released now.
Yes. Yeah.
I mixed that one, and it was produced by a guy named Dashka in Mongolia. They recorded it in Mongolia. But that led into a whole bunch of new stuff that they're doing with Metallica. But that song, the label called me, Alan Kovacs' label called me, Better Noise Music, and said, hey, we're putting out this specialty record. You know, there's going to be Breaking Benjamin. There's going to be Papa Roach, Five Finger Death Punch, all their bands are on this. Can the Who contribute a track? And I said, well, what if we did a cover? Because I've been wanting them to do a cover forever. And we Mongolia-fied it. We Who-ified it. So that's how Sad But True happened. So we translated the lyrics, got permission from Lars and James, who are the writers, and recorded it, and then made that epic video that you can see on YouTube that looks like it's like a Star Wars movie.
Fucking but, great song.
Yeah. Yeah. I mixed that. I didn't produce it. I mixed that record, and then created the concept of that recording.
You know what? But what amazes me too is I was unfamiliar with this band, and I know they're from China, obviously.
Mongolia.
Sorry, pardon me. I know that I probably shouldn't say that. They're from that area, but Mongolia. And what's fascinating is that I liked it. Like, you know, as a rock guy, yeah. And I do love rock music. I love all kinds of music, but I couldn't, I could feel what they were doing. I could understand it. I didn't get any of the music any of the lyrics. You don't really have to, but these guys are great fucking musicians, like unbelievable musicians.
Well, if you listen to the Jacoby one, there is a bunch of English on that one. And there's, you know, Lizzie Hale did one from Hailstorm. She's fucking incredible. She did a you can find that on YouTube as well.
She but, can fucking sing. Oh my God.
She's Canadian. Is that a Canadian band?
No, she's from like the East Coast, like Virginia, but she lives in Nashville. Hailstorm are American.
Fucking she's a rocket
beast. She's a total, and she's an angel of a human being. But to finish that question about how I found them. So Tuga calls me and I said, who's your social media team? Like, how do you guys already have 7 million views on YouTube? And he said, what's social media? And I went, oh my, so you mean all this is organic? and he said, yeah, we just put it out. So I said, well, what's your plan? He said, well, we have a record finish and we're going to put it up on Bandcamp in a week. And I went, no, stop anything. And then I said,
it's a great plan. We're going to throw it up on MySpace in a couple of months. We'll let you know when it's out.
Yeah, and not that he's a dumb, he's not a dumb guy at all. He's a very smart dude. But they just didn't really have a plan or know what to do. And they were getting this traction. And then NPR wrote an article on them. And then everybody knew who they were in the industry at that point. So I, on the phone call, the very first call with Tuga, I'm like, Tuga, let me manage this band with you. And so that's how it happened. So the next day I'm on a Skype call with The Who in Mongolia, Tuga translating. And them and me saying, I don't know what this is going to become. I don't know how famous I'm going to be able to make you because you don't sing in English. You know, you're different, but cool different. And they just went, no problem. We trust you 100%. I'm like, how do you trust a guy that you just met from LA? You know, and they're like, we just know you're the right one. And boom, there it went. And within a week, I had them a six-figure record deal with Alan Kovac's label. I had Mark Geiger, the head of WME, who's Foo Fighters and Adele's agent. He's since left now, but you know, the team, WME team, are still there for them. Had him a publishing deal, had him a merch deal. I had the whole thing worked out. Had an entertainment lawyer, it just all came together. And then we went on tour and sold out our very first tour in Europe. And their second show was Rock and Ring. I was there. In Germany, playing to 40,000 people that rushed to see them, so it was really cool, very
crazy,
cool.
And that's why Bandcamp is so instrumental in the success of an artist's career.
We never did the Bandcamp; that never happened.
Brandon Friesen is our guest. He's a producer of
you get a bigger cut with Bandcamp, Brandon. They only take 15%.
That made me laugh. So listen, just a couple of quick questions for you, because you're a producer of everybody and a sound engineer for everybody. I have this conversation with my friend, and I'm actually going for a dinner tonight, which I probably shouldn't, but it's COVID time. I probably should, but I'm going to go.
Are you in Toronto?
Toronto. Right now, really? Yeah. Toronto. The Beatles or the Stones?
Stones.
For me personally,
yeah.
The Stones all day long, but I absolutely fucking admire the Beatles. And I have a story, which is a Canadian related story. So Jeff Healy, remember the guitar player Jeff Healy?
Yeah.
Especially blind. In Toronto, you know, yeah, the blind guitar player played in Roadhouse.
Yeah, so, passed away about 10 years ago from cancer, yeah.
Yeah, very sad, very sad. So I ended up acquiring some of his masters and released them on a label I had when I lived in Canada. Well, anyway, I went and remixed While My Guitar Gently Weeps, which was one of his hits, which was a cover of the Beatles. And as I had that session up, George Harrison is singing background vocals on that song. And Jeff Lynne is playing really out of time, out of tune acoustic guitar on that song. And Paul Schaefer, piano player for David Letterman, is playing the piano on that song. And you never knew that on the original mix that they made, because it was all,
I had no idea,
sounding. It was all 80s sounding flangey guitar. You know, I took all of that, stripped all that away, and just used the organic parts of it. And then obviously Jeff Healy's solos and stuff. But for me to actually be mixing and having a Beatle, that was one of those boxes I never even had on a list because I never thought I'd tick it. There you go. I mixed the song with a Beatle on it. George
Good
Harrison.
For you, man. That's pretty wild.
You never told me that story, Brandon. You've never told me that story.
Yeah, I mean, it was almost like a spiritual moment, man. Like soloing just his vocals and hearing them. They sound exactly like the original While My Guitar Gently Weeps vocal. I mean, it's him. It's the same guy. It's him.
Yeah.
And hearing that distinctive, oh my God, it's a Beatle. It's so, you know, it was so cool.
I had no idea he tracked that with fucking Harrison, like at all. Yeah.
Yeah. So they tracked it, and then they came to Hanson Studios in LA, and they were able to wrangle. Ringo Starr was a buddy of the band. So he was able to wrangle George Harrison, Paul Schaefer. In fact, Paul Schaefer is the guy who got him his record deal with Quincy Jones or with Clive Davis. So
well, Paul's got connected. Some Canadian roots, right?
Yeah.
Thunder Bay. Yeah. He's from Thunder Bay. Yeah.
Thunder Bay kid.
Is it like is specifically, you know, the Beatles and the Stones, and I don't know if it's a great conversation to have. I love having it because I'm obsessed with who's the best at everything of all time in every capacity, right? So I look at, you know, I have this conversation, is it AC/DC or the Stones? Is it the Beatles or the Stones? Do you take attrition?
I can tell you exactly who the most, when you travel the world, who the most recognized and adored and admired artist of all time is, and that is David Bob Hasselhoff? Marley. Bob Marley. Really?
Bob Marley,
Not the Hoff?
Hands down, Bob Marley. You'll hear Bob Marley in Indonesia. You'll hear him in Australia. You'll hear him in the Philippines. You'll hear him everywhere. When you go to Indonesia, they don't really know much about, they don't care. I mean, obviously, there's musos there that know the Beatles and the Stones, but you don't hear them at the bar. You don't hear them at the beach. You don't hear them in the malls. You hear Bob Marley everywhere in every country in this planet.
Next question. Fish or the Grateful Dead?
To be honest with you, I don't like either one of them.
Brandon, I so love you.
Yeah,
I fucking hate those.
I hate both those bands too. But I had to bring it up because usually, like, I'm looking at pictures of you today when I was researching. I'm like, looks like he likes the Grateful Dead.
Oh, really? Hey, man, I admire their success. You know, but I mean, give me a song.
You got to admire any band that fucking has a career that can't play their instruments. Like, well, I mean, good for you, right?
Like Kiss.
Well, I mean, Paul Stanley's great.
He might be great, but none of those guys can play instruments. Like I've been to two Kiss shows. Both of them, I left smelling like vomit, and absolutely did not appreciate anything that happened. Yeah, it was a great show.
But isn't Grateful Dead is sort of like the rave scene? In the rave scene, you got to be on ecstasy, and when you're at a Grateful Dead show, you have to be on LSD or shrooms or something like that.
LSD, yeah.
And then the music just seems better, and it's not because they're shit, and it just seems better because you're on LSD. It sounds like what LSD sounds like, for lack of a better description. You know,
They probably have to give the LSD out at the door, James, just so people can stomach the show.
I respect anybody, any band that can like create a subculture around itself, though. Like that's a good point.
That is exactly right. And the Grateful Dead did that better than any other band in the history of life. Those deadheads, as they call themselves, would get in vans and follow them. It didn't matter what city they were playing in. It's the same people. They just follow them everywhere they went. Yeah. So how do you convince 40,000 people to like, hey, follow us, to, you know, across the country and buy a ticket for 50 shows?
Excellent chemist.
Psychedelics. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Well, you know, to your point, though, you're right. I mean, that is, you know, like trap or you know, house music, trance music. I mean, trance music sounds really good when you're on ketamine. It sounds amazing when you're on coke.
Yes, my.
And I can that from experience.
I cut my teeth as a rave promoter. And we used to bring in Tiesto before he was big. Like he was getting paid like $300,000 a gig, like, you know, for a decade or something. We brought him in 1999 and it was like $1,200, but it was still the same Tiesto, you know, and ecstasy was part of the culture. It just like the DJs, God bless them, knew how to mix so that it complemented the way that you felt when you were high, so that you knew when the buildup was and you knew when the chill spot in the track was and you felt it and you went in waves. And it was really interesting. I think you're probably right. I think the Grateful Dead and psychedelic rock and all that kind of stuff is like the closest thing that I can think of to match it. I don't know. Maybe reggae and weed, but not really, you know?
No, you're dead right. I've been to EDC and Tomorrowland and I love electronic music. And I'll tell you, man, like, yeah, those guys do get paid a lot of money and some of them are really great producers. But when you go there, every girl is, if she's not in her bras and panties, she's naked. So you've got 50,000, you have 50,000 young, beautiful women who are not wearing clothes. And then you've got 50,000 dudes who are, you know, all whatever, good looking dudes. And they're just rocking out. I mean, it is a pretty, you know, pretty person's culture. You know what I mean? And it's a young culture, you know? So do those people buy records? No. But they'll, so those artists, you know, and quite often with electronic music is you don't even care who the artist is. You don't even know who the artist is unless it's like a Skrillex or a really identifiable guy like that. But it works, man. It just doesn't sell records, you know.
Live shows are their bread and butter for sure. Go ahead.
Here's a great, great segue, James. And I'm glad you brought it up. And I'm glad you guys are talking about shows, like going to shows again. We're 14, 15 months into the pandemic. I'm obviously you work with a ton of artists. When is touring going to start again? And how fucking bad is it? And has it been for people? I mean, you know, this is a conversation we haven't had. We've been, you know, focused on the science behind this, trying to get people to wear masks, getting people to get the fucking vaccine, talking about the idiots that run around and cause problems and walk into a grocery store and, you know, show their religious rights card to everybody and start fucking fights. Like, you know, we've been enjoying the scenery involved in this. But listen, the gig economy's fucked. And we all know this. And you work with a bunch of people that make their money. And like I saw Genesis today just announced a tour and I was laughing because Phil Collins got taken to the cleaners by his ex-wife. And I'm like, oh, obviously these guys need some money, right? Like this is a real deal. There are a lot of bands out there that have made cheddar for a long time that have been on the sidelines. But and I know it's starting to kind of come back in the States. But how far off do you think, you know, full blown tours are? And how bad is the damage in the gig economy and live business?
So, well, the tours are coming back. So we are, in fact, the Who are playing a bunch of festivals starting in September until the end of November here in America. The hardest part, though, is when you're a band at that level, you have to do headline theater shows, you know, 1500 cap rooms in between the festival dates to make it profitable. And, you know, you have staff, you have crew, you have buses, you got tons of expenses. So state by state, some states are going to open up later than others. Right now in Texas, there's artists touring in bars. Everything's normal in Texas. You wouldn't even know there was.
You can do an arena show in Texas? Like, are they doing those yet or no?
I don't know about that yet, but yeah, there's bar shows. So in full capacity, no masks, nothing. It's Texas, man. They're going to do whatever the fuck they want. But the hard part is, for example, we're trying to work Canada into this tour for the Who. We don't know if Canada's going to, if there's a forced quarantine when they enter Canada, then we're not going to Canada on this tour. But I can assure you it's all coming back September. In fact, Lollapalooza plays the end of July and they're having a meeting with the mayor and they're going to announce next week whether it's going to go or not. And that would be the earliest big recognizable festival, Lollapalooza.
And well, if that Perry doesn't keep his mouth shut, so he's already.
You already know about it. Yeah.
So, it probably is not. Maybe it's not your area, like your responsibility or anything. But what's it like with sponsors? Because it's always a pain in the ass sometimes, anyways. But is it like one of those situations where they hold out, wait to see what's going on? Like, can you not rely on sponsors right now?
The problem with the promote, like right now, the promoters are doing some goofy things where they're trying to have conditions, COVID conditions in there where they can get out of paying you or insuring you for lawsuits or if there's cancellations for the show. There's some goofy stuff like that happening in deals, but a lot of that isn't the promoters who are the problem. It's the insurance companies are afraid, and they have to have permits from the city. So if the city's in panic mode, then they will just pull their permit and not allow them to have the event. So there's a lot of that going on. So it's not the promoters who are the bad guys or the sponsors who are the bad guys. The sponsors are, you know, the other part of this too is like Lollapalooza last year lost they had to pay $700,000 for their to the city for that lease on that land for that weekend. They have a contract, and if they don't play this year or sometime soon, then it's going to go away. It's going to just go away and be gone for good, which we don't want, right? So that's where we're at. And there's other countries like Australia where you're locked in a hotel for 2 weeks when you enter. So their touring is going to come back in January when that restriction is lifted. They're already half vaccinated. They've had, you know, it under control for a while, but they don't want people coming in.
Yeah.
So I guarantee you by January, it'll all be back to normal everywhere in the world. And the Who have a massive arena tour we're doing in Europe, February, March, April. And then we're coming straight here to do Coachella 22 But 21, by September, you'll start to see it go back to normal. Hmm. Yeah. And if they can't play 25% capacities, no festival can make money if it isn't 80% or more capacity. So
I think it's awful that the venue, that the city wants to take back the money, even though they're not going to lease it anyways. Right? There's a lot of that shit going on, you know?
Contractual. Yeah. Yeah, I know. Mm. Yeah, it's, but it'll all come back. It'll all be there. I mean, the whole world will be vaccinated, and the ones who aren't won't matter because everybody else will be. So they can, those noisy ones.
Say that again. Say that again out loud. Say that again. The ones that aren't getting vaccinated don't matter.
The ones that aren't getting vaccinated won't matter in the sense that there'll be more vaccinated people than them.
So I just read that the concert. I just read that concerts are going to be. Yeah, sorry. I don't mean to cut you off, but I just read that concerts are like one of the big driving forces behind the vaccine passport. Like they're like all for it. They're like, yeah, let's do it because that's going to be able to make our insurance right. That's going to be able to make our crowd feel comfortable. That's going to make our artists feel comfortable. All that, right? Yeah. So that's interesting because there's a lot of big voices there, right? That probably have some influence over what.
Have you guys got your vaccine? Have you got them?
Yeah.
Vaccinated.
We first dose vaccination.
Yeah. Did you get Pfizer? I got the Pfizer. I did the Pfizer one, and man, it made me feel really off for about a day or two, but it's so worth it, man. It's so liberating. Like once you know you have that and you're like, okay, I got a pass. I didn't get the virus. You know, I have friends who are young dudes who got COVID who didn't, you know, survived it, but their lungs are still sore. They're still having all these issues.
You guys bring up a great point, Jamesy and Brandon. I'd love to ask about it, which is, you know, you have bands touring that want to tour. You've got insurance companies that have to cover everything. You've got concern from bands. And bands love their fans, right? Like, you're not going to have a band like Metallica go out and say, fuck, we don't care if anybody's not vaccinated. They would like everybody to go there, have a great time, not you know, blow lung chunks 5 to 7 days after they leave and die, right? It's a big deal. So I got to wonder about some of the bands that don't want to get vaccinated. Like, you know, have you talked to any artists that don't believe in, you know, the science, that really aren't interested in getting this vaccine, because all those guys are going to be fucked?
There's a couple. Yeah, there's a couple that are from the Midwest or a little more Republican leaning that are
Five Finger Death Punch.
No, not at all, man. Zoltan's a brilliant man, brilliant guy.
Is he? Okay. I thought Five Finger was anti-vax, or was that or did I misread a video they put out?
They're not anti-vax. No, I can't imagine they would be. What was my point? So yeah, what we were talking about?
Bands that don't want to get vaccinated.
Yeah.
So, some of them, but I'll give you an example. Like the Who, we were in Australia when the pandemic really hit, and we were in Adelaide, and then we went to play Brisbane. We had Download Festival in Melbourne and Sydney the next 2 days after that died. That went away while we were there. And then all the countries closed their borders. I flew the band to Sydney, put them in a house on the ocean, and left them there to record and just to make use of their time. Because from there, we were supposed to go to South America and do the Lollapaloozas. And then we were going to Coachella. And then, you know, we had a massive year that it all just, you know, vaporized. But they then were stuck in Australia for 2 months. Then by the time we were finally able to get them a flight back to Mongolia, which was almost next to impossible, we had to route them through Turkey and all this other crap. They had to get locked up in a hospital hotel room for 3 weeks, right? Ugh. Because that's how strict their country was on that policy. Those guys will get the vaccination yesterday. They are like, no more of this experience. This is crap. So people aren't going to be able, like right now, like the European Union do not want Americans there because we have so many cases. If you have a vaccination, they're going to open it up to people that can show their vaccination card. And I knew that was coming. So that's why I was like first in the line trying to get a vaccination. I'm like, I want to go back to traveling. I want to go, you know, back and to business. And that's what's going to happen. In a year from now, all of this bullshit and all this hype about my rights and my liberties and my religious rights or just my pure stupidity and ignorance, whatever it is, that's all going to be gone. It's all going to go away. because this will be this will.
Well,
be
you have a lot more faith in fucking humanity than I do, Brandon. Good for you. Fucking
well, nice work. I think America's last election kind of proved that there are little. Luckily, there's slightly a few more smart people than there are stupid ones. So I think as long as we can stay ahead of that, we can.
Yeah, I hope you're right, man. I really do, but it just seems to be growing. It's funny because we get all of the hardcore anti-maskers, anti-vaskers, and rights and freedom people, and in Canada, and I'm like, have you watched any videos? You brought up Mongolia. Have you watched any videos of other countries and how they're handling it? Like, what? Pull your head out of your ass. Like, part of the problem in Canada is they've been too lax, and and the messaging has been conflicting, and they've been wishy-washy. Like, New Zealand, man, they shut the fucking borders down. They closed that island down like that.
Yeah, great leadership. Great, great prime minister there.
We don't have any leadership.
It's also about the size of Mississauga. Yeah. Let's be honest. You know, it's not exactly a big place.
That's exactly right. And Mongolia is, you know, massive, but it's only got 3 million people. So it can be managed, you know. China, Vietnam, Korea. If you went there 6 months ago, you wouldn't even know there was something happening because everybody's walking the streets. All the markets are full. They had it under control 6 months ago, and the Western media doesn't talk about it because we're so far behind. We are Neanderthals compared to what they've done, and because everybody just complied when they said, you know, go home, stay in your house for 3 weeks. Nobody complained. Wear a mask. Nobody complained. Have a QR code that shows everywhere you go, so that we can trace you. Nobody complained. Nobody was like, oh, it's a conspiracy. The government's going to know everything I do. People in China live great lives. Their food is great. They have wealth. They have beautiful, cool cars. It is nothing like what the Western media wants to portray it. And they had this shit figured out half a year ago already, you know?
They get to do stuff like that we don't. Like when someone says, I'm not abiding by the pandemic rules, they'll beat you with a bamboo stick.
In the streets in front of your fucking neighbors. Yeah,
in front of your family.
Half an hour.
And somehow it's all a game show.
I just every time Chris Sky, if we have him on again, every time he starts talking, just play one of those fucking videos.
Well,
some guy getting fucking beat in the street.
In Canada, if they did not reopen hockey games until everybody was vaccinated, if your neighbor didn't want to be vaccinated, you'd drag him out of his house and bring him down there and stick the needle in his arm for him. That's what you would do. Take away hockey.
Totally.
There we go. We're getting leadership ideas from Brandon in Hollywood. Thank you.
I'm such a massive fan of the vaccine passport for that exact reason. And I think, you know, anytime you say something like, oh, I'm a big fan of the vaccine passport, the next thing out of some anti-vaxxer's mouth, if you tweet it, is usually, oh, you hate freedom. And you're like, no, I love it. And I'm looking forward to all kinds of freedoms that you're not entitled to because you won't get a fucking vaccine. And there isn't a concert promoter like a Live Nation. You think Live Nation, after getting fisted for the last year, is going to say, come one, come all, we'll take our chances? No. Fuck no. You're going to have to prove that you got vaccinated, and you're going to have to prove everybody you were with is vaccinated, because there is no way Live Nation and guys like Brett Gallagher and the group with Live Nation, there's no way those guys are going to go, let's spin the dice. Let's see what happens. Let's spin the wheel. Yeah. Roll the dice. Yeah. Let's fucking figure it out.
I don't like wearing a mask either.
It sucks, man. I don't like wearing it either, but, you know, just be respectful. I mean, go out, wear the mask, take it off. People just take it so goddamn serious, man. The whole thing about this conservative media, and I'm not a Democrat or Republican. I'm not a conservative or a liberal. I'm right down the middle. I'm just the common, like, whatever's common sense and whatever, you know, doesn't create racism, whatever doesn't create misogyny is cool with me. But this is just misinformation. This is a lot of the conservatives that don't have any good ideas or agendas, so they're creating conspiracy theories. And that's what this is. It's just to, you know, to be heard is what it is. And it's sad. It's sad how dumb and naive people are. And the one thing they don't realize is when you have your iPhone in your, or your Android, whatever you use, in your pocket, every one of those apps know where you are. And Facebook and all those apps are listening to your conversation. Why do you think you see advertisements of, you know, you talk about like, I want to buy an electric bike. Suddenly on Facebook, everything you see is electric bikes. Why do you think that is? They have algorithms and speech recognition software. And I know this because I have founded software companies. They sell those analytics. That's half of their valuation as a company to raise money is the analytics. So all these people who think it's their rights and their freedoms, then you should be using an analog cell phone and you should never go on the internet. That's the only way to be truly off the grid and free.
Since we started this podcast, I just got an ad for the Everlast single, What It's Like. Swear to God. No, I didn't. But I do want to talk about Everlast because I'm a hip hop head and I was looking over your list of artists and it's a really awesome list. And then there's Everlast. And I was like, well, that stands out a little bit. Like it's not, you didn't do a hip hop song with him.
Jump Around?
What It's Like.
What It's Like.
Well, yeah. So that was the thing with Locker and I did. That was a part of that 97 thing. But speaking of House of Pain, DJ Lethal became one of my first, when I moved to LA 2008, my first friends were Matt Sorum, the drummer from Guns N' Roses, and DJ Lethal. And so to this day, DJ Lethal just lives down the road from me. And we still produce records together and we still hang out together. And wonderful, wonderful dude, man. And he's the guy that created that. Dun, 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 dun. He was House of Pain and then he went on to Limp Bizkit.
Oh, wow. Wait, he did the Vanilla Ice song?
No, the House of Pain.
Oh, you just did the Vanilla Ice song.
Jump Around.
Because you just generalized white rappers. I saw it. We all witnessed it. What's next? You're like, yeah, that Tom Green song. What It's Like. Yeah, it was amazing.
Right. Yeah, I did. I probably did do that. Stop.
You remember Eminem's song, Jump Around?
What's that? Yeah, House of Pain.
I'm out of white rappers, so I got it.
Got that great sample in it. I actually asked DJ Lethal where he got that from.
And where did he get it from?
Everlast told Joe Rogan.
Did he really?
Yeah.
He got it off of porn? Is that where he got it from?
He ripped it off of a porn sample.
Yeah. It was a Funk Dubious. Funk Dubious had it, I thought. And he's like, what are you listening to?
Everlast did not make that beat. Everlast plays guitar. DJ Lethal made that beat.
But didn't he get the sample of something that was playing out of Funk Doobie's stereo? That's what I thought.
Probably.
Yeah. I think we need to stop having this conversation. We're the four whitest guys in Canada.
Well, okay,
guys, tell me more about the honky rappers. Let's go.
I'm a top 10 rapper in Canada, just to point that out.
Oh, you fuck, James. You should send some of your raps to Brandon. I would love his opinion.
Because Brandon probably never gets people saying, I should send you something I just recorded.
Right. Right. Hey, can you listen to my demo?
Hey, guys, you guys got Drake. You know, Drake is no joke. Drake is one of the biggest rappers in the planet. And you had Snow. Remember Snow? I love Snow.
That's Informer. Right.
Yeah.
Informer. That's in about 10 television commercials right now, too, Brando. Like I was watching a Geico commercial the other day, and it was like Snow's 12. And the album was one of my favorite names for an album ever. 12 Inches of Snow. I'm like, talking about his wiener.
That's right.
Yeah. He's talking about his wiener and trying to make it look like he's talking about a record. It's his wiener. He's talking about his wiener.
Plus, it's proof that he was really trying to be black.
Well, but didn't he record that record when he was like in jail to give him like cred? And
he just got out of jail. But the thing was, he was in jail for like a bunch of white guy stuff, like cheating on his taxes or something like that. It was great.
It was actually a weapons possession charge. But okay.
He's so hard. Yeah, but the weapon was like a letter opener or something.
It was like a rolling pin.
I got a question for Brandon.
Yeah.
What are you working on right now? What are you working on right now? What's in front of you? What are you mixing?
Oh, what am I doing right this minute? I just finished a thing with Rehab, the DJ Rehab and the Kooks. That's coming out soon. I just finished Metallica, a secret Metallica thing that's coming out.
Right.
What else? And then The Who. They got up some new Who stuff. There's a band from Florida called The Haunt, THEHAUNT. I just finished working with them. And I'm in the middle of Shanika Knowles, who was on, she was on Hannah Montana. She was the villain. She's now a famous movie star. And we just did two soundtracks for two different movies that she's in. And she sung
Did
on
you do the Miley Cyrus stuff? Are you allowed to talk about that?
I didn't do Miley's new record. That was Richard, what was it? I can't remember his name. The guy who did Amy Winehouse, great producer. Uptown Funk.
Oh, Okay. All right.
Can I just ask a quick question? I'm just wondering if, are you at the stage now in your career where you would pass on trying to break an artist? Like if you were like, oh my God, the world has to hear this artist. Are you, is that sort of like not where you're at right now? Or would you
go down that road? I love breaking artists.
Awesome. Brandon does it. That's been his whole career.
Yep.
Yeah. I recognize everybody on the list. So I was just, and everyone that he's saying right now, I recognize all those names. So I was just curious if that was something that you still do. So now I know.
Yeah. I probably have to update that list. I mean, since then I've produced like the Kooks, who are, you know, a famous British band and so on. Yeah. But, I mean, I like working with established artists, but I also really like finding new artists and breaking them. So I am doing it right now. I constantly awesome. Do it. So. Yeah, it's fun.
Easier to do now in 2021 where you can break new artists and find new artists on YouTube, or you know, you can find new artists on Instagram. Like it's got, I don't know if it's possible, but have you found anybody on social media where like other than The Who, but you didn't really find them on social media? I mean, and they didn't even know they were on social media.
I did. I mean, they, you know, a link of the video was sent to me, and then I contacted them through Facebook. But I don't know, man, like Instagram, like right. A lot of the Instagram culture is, you know, a certain thing, you know what I mean? So you're not going to find the cool rock band or the cool DJ or rapper from there, because it's all just this cookie cutter crap right now, I find. But that's just the demographic that's on Instagram. Sometimes I find things.
There's still rock out there, man. There's still rock. And
oh no, rock is strong. Dude, I mean, look at the amount of rock festivals compared to electronic. Or hip hop festivals, it's still outnumbered at 5-1. It's still there. Rock has never gone away. It's still there.
You just hear that from the labels. They want to kill it. They want to put a bullet in it, but people still want to hear rock.
Not at all. Right now they're signing more rock bands than they ever have because for 10 years they followed that trend towards pop and electronic. Labels are famous for that, man. I mean, when disco finally became a thing, then you had Kiss doing a disco song. You had Stones doing a disco song.
Yeah.
Everybody was doing disco. Now rock bands are collaborating with rappers, and which is wonderful. It's awesome, man. Blur all the lines. I think it's great.
Brandon, I know you got to go, so we won't keep you for much longer, but Metallica or the Stones?
Oh my
He's
God.
He's working with Metallica right now. That's so unfair.
Yeah. No, that's why I asked.
No, they're two different things.
Metallica. Okay.
So different things.
Willie or Dolly? Willie or Dolly?
Willie.
They are both the cool. I've had a chance to meet and work with both of them. They are both of them are like the oracles. When I worked with Dolly, she came to the studio with a bowl of chili that she made, or a stew.
That's not what I thought you were going to say.
No.
Yeah. Big bowl of meth.
She is so cool.
She showed me a bowl of chili. Oh wow, great story. Thanks, Brandon.
Wait till you hear what they did with the chili.
Suck the wind out of that.
She made chili and brought it to you.
It was like your grandma showing up with you know, I cooked. It was Sunday afternoon, and she cooked dinner.
Is it true you have to fax her?
Yes, that's true. Yeah,
that's like Bill Murray.
That's unbelievable. See, now,
she is off the grid. And she still got vaccinated. So there you go.
Yeah. Good.
Good
smart lady.
Fucking Dolly. Yeah.
Kanye or Kendrick?
100% Kendrick. 100%.
Yeah.
All the way.
Did you buy Kanye's shoes for $1.8 million the other day? Was that you?
No, not at all. Okay. No. Those shoes, those Yeezys.
Yeah.
Are the ugliest shoes I've ever seen.
They look like MC Hammer Pants' bastard children.
I love that Walmart's mad at him for stealing their logo. Did you see that?
How stupid can somebody? That's insane.
Wait, I got one last one. Everlast or James? He hasn't heard it yet. I can't do that.
Yeah, we'll send it. We'll send his rap to you.
This is awesome. Yeah. I get to bug him by sending him my demo. Thanks, Lachlan. Yeah. I feel bad for calling Lachlan Cock Blocklin now all those times.
No, you don't.
Yeah, that's true.
Is Irish? Are you? What's your? Oh, you're Italian, right? So it's
Italian Dutch. Ireland. I'm constantly at odds with myself.
Yeah. He is quite a rapper, actually. But he's just send really him good. Just send him the stuff where you're fucked out of your mind on mushrooms.
Send him the shroom.
I'll send him the shrooms one. Yes.
Yeah. Do it. Do it. It'll be great. Listen, I know you got to roll, Brandon, and you're busy, and we got to roll too. But it has been an absolute pleasure. Oh, sorry, Nickelback or Default? Someone wants to know before we go.
Nickelback.
Jack Kroeger is one of the greatest songwriters of our generation.
Yeah. So Nickelback. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just checking.
Soundgarden. And by the way, Chad, the biggest hit Default ever had, Chad wrote. So.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Wasting my time. Okay. So, sorry, Nirvana or Soundgarden? Last one. Nirvana or Soundgarden?
I can't. I love That's them not fair. Too much, man. I love them.
I would lean on Soundgarden.
Yeah, okay. Chris Cornell, man. Like you'll never have a voice like that ever again. Ever.
That's
again.
True. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah. Pearl Jam or Soundgarden?
Soundgarden.
Yeah. Okay. Pearl Jam or Nirvana? Pearl Jam or Nirvana?
Nirvana. Guys, are you serious? Watch this. Pearl Jam or anyone else? No, it's kidding.
No, I like Pearl Jam.
I like Pearl Jam. They're for their nostalgia, but
Pearl Jam had more of a foot in the blues, right?
Oh, wait a second. Pearl Jam or Smashing Pumpkins?
Oh, Pearl Jam. Fucking a heartbeat. Although Melancholy is maybe one of the greatest double albums in the history of time.
Yeah, it is brilliant.
Fucking totally incredible.
Exactly. But Billy Corgan is such a cock. It's not hard. It's hard to listen to that. Right?
Worst breath around, in the world, too.
He's coming around. He's starting to be nice again because nobody wanted to work with him for about a decade. So he
is kept on going on true? Alex Jones. Yeah. He kept on going on Alex Jones for some reason. I don't know.
Yeah, he's got the whole band back together. They were gonna be touring last year.
The whole band because Darcy's not in it, right?
Oh yeah.
She succumbed, did she not?
No, she's alive. She just doesn't want anything to do with the Billy Corgan, and Billy Corgan doesn't want anything to do with her. I interviewed both of them once within the span of like 10 minutes. And I know Billy had maybe the worst breath I've ever smelled in my entire life. And then I had to interview Darcy, and she walked out of the bathroom right in front of me for the interview. And she just obviously had a big meal the night before, and that didn't smell good either. Yeah. No. So, and then when they walked out, I was doing one interview, went to the other, and all the smells kind of hit me, and I was kind of standing back like this. And Darcy looks at me and she goes, "What the fuck's your problem?" I'm like, "Guess we're not doing the interview, huh?"
Oh my God. Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, she's into artist management now. She messed around with that over here in LA. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, good for her. Nice to see you. Well, listen, I think they're a great band. I just had a personal experience. It didn't smell great with either of them. So
still better than your Marilyn Manson experience.
Yeah, he was naked grabbing his wiener. Not great. Naked, rubbing his wiener the whole time I talked to him.
So like an average weekend with Lachlan, basically.
Basically, yeah.
I'm rubbing my wiener right now.
Brandon Friesen, producer. Go ahead.
Sorry, because this is really interesting for me, because you guys obviously get to interview. You have a different perspective than I do, because I'm usually in a room trying to create the next cool thing that people want to hear with them. But you guys get to pick them apart and help them promote shit and whatever. Who's the best interview that you ever did?
Dave Grohl.
Dave Grohl, yeah.
And Tommy Lee. Tommy Lee and Dave Grohl. Tommy Lee, I got a chance to get to know him, saw his wiener a couple of times. It's legit. Partied with him a couple of times. Might be one of the nicest guys you've ever met in your life. Just wants everybody around him to have fun.
2 months going to his house in Calabasas every single day, going down into his basement studio and working on that public record. So
have you met a happier guy in your life? Like, he's always fucking happy to see you.
At the time that he was doing the public record and Scott Humphrey was producing that, Tommy was really into booze. So he'd wake up and drink, red wine all day, and you'd see him kind of shaking a little bit, and then he'd graduate into vodka later in the day. But he's clean. He stopped that. So luckily, because he wasn't healthy. So he was kind of really quiet, and his skin was a little gray at the time. He was just going through a phase of alcoholism. and then he found, I think he's having girl issues too, because I always heard a lot of shit going on upstairs. But eventually that calmed down and he got sober, and he's back to Tommy, that vibrant guy that he is, man. So yeah, he was so kind and so cool and like wants to know about you. And he's a great human being. So he'd just sit next to me and he'd kind of whisper and talk quietly, while he's sipping wine and we're working on shit. It was really cool. I loved it.
I interviewed Chris Cornell that was a religious experience for me. And he was sort of, it was the Audio Slave record when it came out in 2006. And
Cochise.
And I interviewed the rest of the band as well, obviously. So Rage Against the Machine, I'm a huge fan. Eddie was really cool. And the one that's my biggest surprise to date, as far as artists go, I mean, I've interviewed lots of really cool artists that people don't care about because, you know, they're Canadian and, but they're great guys. But I interviewed Lars, and Lars was a fucking, he was so interesting. And I was begging them to give me Hetfield. And
is that the time you called him a wingnut and then he shut the interview down?
No. I called him a wingnut right out of the gates, man. Like I told him, I said, listen, I said, you're kind of crazy. Like you're a bit of a wingnut, aren't you? And he was like, yeah, no, I am. And then then he opened up to me and he was awesome. Lars was unbelievable, man. He got into it. Like we chatted for about 20 minutes before they played that night, and he was a fucking great interview. That one was the one that surprised me the most.
Yeah. Wow.
Jeez. My best one was Flavor Flav because we're the same height.
So what was that? What was the most nightmare interview you ever did?
With an artist?
Yeah, I interviewed
Shad once, and it was an awesome interview. It was like 45 minutes, and he was like really opening up about his childhood and what he went through and this and that. And then he left. It was at his publicist's office. He thanked me. He was like, that was a really good interview. I was like, thanks. It was right at the beginning when I was in my 20s, like late 20s, early 30s maybe. And then my cameraman looks at me and he's like, I didn't get any of that.
Oh,
I'm
no.
Like, oh, my God.
You're fired. To press record.
You're fired. He's like, you're not paying me. And I'm like, fuck.
You know which one the worst one was for me? I got two. George Thorogood was a cock. He was just, all his songs are about drinking, but you can't ask him about drinking. Like, and fucking just blocking. And just difficult, right? The other one was Matt Good in Canada.
He had a reputation for being difficult.
He's bipolar, I think, or something. And so you would get either good Matt or bad Matt. And I remember having like a yelling match with him, like on the air live, like two or three times. We'd get into fights. Yep. Wow. Yeah, he was always difficult.
Yeah. I'm going to say Gene Simmons right off the top. Gene Simmons.
That was the worst one you had?
Yeah. I've interviewed him three times. All three times, he just acted like an egregious cock. Like, couldn't help himself.
He was being himself.
But like, wants to make everybody around him feel like absolute garbage all the time. And then what you did, Locke, with one of your guys, where I'm like, I don't want to interview this guy because I'm going to fucking yell at him. So I let one of our interns interview him. And by the end of the interview, which was like 4 minutes, I'm sweating from just pure anxiety listening to this thing. Gene Simmons, everything that came out of his mouth, like the intern would say, so tell me about, you know, what you're doing when you're coming to town. Well, if you would have read the release, then you wouldn't have asked such a stupid fucking question. And I'm like, yeah, that's an asshole. Am I ever glad I didn't do that interview?
Brandon, I gotta go. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, you gotta go.
I gotta go get my daughter. And it was really good to see you. I hate to interrupt that story, Dean, but thank you very much. Thanks for having me, guys.
Anytime. See you, Brandon. Lock and Cross, 95.7 Cruise FM.
Beer soon, Brandon. Beer soon.
Absolutely. Zoom beers. Anyway, listen. I know you got to go. I know James has got to go, and I got to split too. But listen, where can people get a hold of you? I know on Instagram, Brandon Friesen Music.
Yeah, Brandon Friesen Music, and then. Facebook, you can find me there. Brandon Friesen, I think it is.
If you got a demo,
I'm gonna send it. Sure. I have to send it now, right?
Yeah. Hey, hit me on Instagram if you want me to hear something, and then I'll send you.
All right. Yeah, that's nice of you, buddy. Thanks, Brandon. Great to see you, and thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate it. All right,
guys. Appreciate you.
There you go. That is Brandon Friesen, super producer, Juno Award winner, multiple Junos.
Wow, super
Grammy
nice guy.
Nominated. Yeah, super good guy. Loves to have a chat, doesn't he? Thanks for doing this, Jamesy. Nice that you got all your stuff figured out.
Yeah.
No problem. Don't worry about it. Great to see you. Love the origami in the background, too. That's
a fucking lamp. I hate it.
Whatever. I love it. Looks awesome.
My wife.
I got to split, though. We'll talk to you soon. Okay. Goodbye. Well, take care. There you go. James D. Fiore at blackballmedia.ca. You can find him on Twitter as well at James D. Fiore. Thanks to everybody for joining us. Thanks for being part of the podcast. Thanks to Brandon. Thanks to you for watching. We appreciate it. Thanks to our friends at Blue Microphones. BlueMic.com. Check them out today. You can get one of these Blue Yeti X microphones, and then you download the G Hub, the Logitech G Hub, and then you can kind of play with it. Your back end, front end. You can check your EQ. You can do the compression. You can pick FM broadcaster. That's what I'm on right now. FM broadcaster setting. FM broadcaster. I got it. Anyway, thanks to our friends at Blue, the official microphone of the DeanBlundell.com podcast network, now 34 podcasts strong, with a little announcement coming about how we're going to double in size in the next couple of weeks. Anyway, thanks to Blue. Thanks to our friends at Easy Auto Financial, easyautofinancial.ca. They'll take care of all your leasing. Do you need a car? Do you need some help with lending? Do you need some leasing? Are you looking to lease a vehicle? Are you having a hard time finding one? Easyautofinancial.ca. Check them out today. You can pick the car you want, and they'll get you approved. That's what they do. Subprime, any kind of lending for a vehicle, easyautofinancial.ca. Domination.com. Go to domination.com right now if you produce content. It's AI that helps you do it in like a fraction of the time it normally takes you to put all the work in to produce content, whether it be a promo, what have you. DMNTN.com. Check them out today. Try them for free. It's incredible stuff. Ed's Fine Imports.com. His gets are the ones that we wear, and you need to be wearing them too, fellas. Boxer briefs with a pouch in the front, super comfortable, like a sleeping bag for your nutsack and your wiener. Get them today by going to Ed's Fine Imports.com and order four for the price of three with promo code GITCH3, Ed's Fine Imports.com. Thanks to Black Rose Organics as well. Black Rose Organics, better medicine at a better price. They're our partner. They want to be yours as well. If you got a medical license, port your medical cannabis license over to them. Go to shop.blackroseorganics.com. Do it all on the front page. And then you can go shopping right away. Garlic sherbet, 30% THC. Yeah, it works. Guaranteed. I know it works because I've tried it. So go there right now. Get part of the medical membership too. And that takes your, like, I think it's $350 ounces down to, like, you know, $175 or something. It's ridiculous. It's almost half price. So go there today. shop.blackroseorganics.com. Have a great day. Make sure you sign up for our newsletter at deanblundell.com. Appreciate everybody being here. Be safe. Go get vaccinated. Be a really good thing if you did. Bye.
I think we need to hear that again. I loved it so much. Everybody has to laugh quietly. Stay dry.